You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me this evening, we have Ken.
Hey.
This evening will be our True Legend special. Yes. But first, if you need to contact us, you could find us at podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Drop us emails, questions, show suggestions, anything. And, yep, this is episode 68. In early February, during the Chinese New Year, Yin Wuping's highly anticipated True Legend will open across Asia. It's the story of the character known as Beggar So or Beggar Su, depending which way you're known. And, of course, the English dubs referred to him as Sam the Seed. That's right, the popular character that gets a new screen adventure. And this time, big tools around. So, basically, hand over to Ken.
Yeah, Yin Wuping is playing with big tools this time rather than his small waifu films, if you will. And True Legend is basically about the character of Su Qi'er, or Su Qi'er, played by Vincent Xiao, or in Cantonese, Choi Man-shuk, who mostly is known as the character of Wong Fei-hung from Once Upon a Time in China 4 and 5, the TV series that followed, and the fan favorite Blade.
And Black Sheep.
And Black Sheep Affair, yeah.
Mm-hmm. AKA Another Meltdown.
Yeah, very fitting title. that character he plays is a well-known and respected member of the community who clearly enjoys living the luxurious lifestyle. Unfortunately, though, jealousy exists everywhere, and the cleverly devised conspiracy finds Su stripped of his fame and fortune. And after being forced out onto the street, his life becomes an uphill struggle and he alienates his family and friends. However, newly found focus comes in the form of the martial arts, and Su is reborn as the patriotic hero known as the King of Beggars. And many Hong Kong movie fans will think of 3 or 4, maybe 5 movies, maybe 10 movies where they recognize this character from. They can be martial arts or comedies. Mm-hmm. But going back a little to provide some background information on this real-life character, he was one of the 10 Tigers of Canton, which was a group of 10 of the top Chinese martial artists in Canton towards the end of the Qing Dynasty, which lasted between 1644 and 1912. Wong Kei-ying, the father of Wong Fei-hung, was one of the others. Of the 10 Tigers. If people want to see where Wong Kei in a movie where Wong Kei-ing is the third Once Upon a Time in China movie features the great actor Lao Xun as Wong Kei-ing, and he has wonderful chemistry with Jet Li as his son Wong Fei-hung. Not a character that they decided to have like a comedic inclusion. It's just fun banter between the two in that particular movie. A 1999 Cantonese TV series named Heroes 10 Tigers of Canton was another place where this group was referenced. The Doctor Who original novel The 11th Tiger even features the 10 Tigers with Wong Kei-ying and Wong Fei-hung being major characters. Hope that's true, because I don't know anything about Doctor Who, but how about you?
No, I think I'm just starting to cotton on, but nowhere near catching up. But even with it being a novel, I've failed myself as a librarian.
Yeah, exactly. You must know. You should be like an encyclopedia.
Well, that's really the public's thought of us.
Yeah, but I'm the public, and I think in general naive ways. Therefore, you should know. Shame on you. So that's basic background. When you talk about the character in movies, there's a connection in the 1970s to that character and to the director, Yuen Woo-ping. because his movies, Drunken Master and Snake and Eagle Shadow, or Snake and Eagle Shadow and Drunken Master, I should say, because they came out in that order, and they were Jun Woo-bin's first movies as director. He featured in his second movie, Drunken Master, the character of Begasu, and he was portrayed by his father, Simon Yun Siu Tin, who basically defined the character during that time and really became the character image for Begasu. And I also thought, but I might be so totally wrong, that essentially it was the same character in Snake and Eagle Shadow, but it might just match up in terms of the character design. But if they are essentially the same, cool. If they are not, still cool, because Simon Yun is really, really good in both of those films. The sequel to Drunken Master, Dance of the Drunk Mantis, featured the character again, as portrayed by Simon Yun Siu Tin, without Jackie Chan this time. But he is referred to, at least in this movie, in the dub, the English dub, as Sam Seed. It might be the second time Drunken Master being the first, but I don't remember when watching the dub of Drunken Master if it was specifically Sam Seed. But at least in Dance of the Drunk Mantis, which is a fact that really doesn't matter at all, but fans of dubs keep them close to their heart because there's a nostalgic feeling there, and they may forever like want to have the character be named Sam Seed, and when they watch True Legend, oh, what am I going to do? <It's>... hope they do a dub and put Sam Seed on it. Other movies, a lesser seen 1979 production called The Story of Drunken Master, by the way, which should not be confused with Joseph Kwo's The World of Drunken Master, which actually featured Simon Yun Siu Tin in a very meaningless cameo, and Lee Imin plays a younger version of the character. But the story of Drunken Master featured Simon Yun as the lead. But there was no huge info on this, i.e. there was no fact-fielding reviews on Hong Kong Movie Database for this movie, but I'm sure it exists in some shape or form. Yun Woo-bin actually cast Donnie Yen in the Begasu role in 1993 for Hero Among Heroes, which would be like a fairly known 90s new wave waifu comedy, really. It was one of those very mixed movies, very broad movies, but decent in its own right, I remember. But now in 2010, Yun Woo-bin is returning to the well, if you will, because among his first movies, as I said, Drunken Master, he featured this character, so he's going back, sort of, and giving Vincent Chow yet another stab at leading man status. And the rest of the cast, which is a very distinguished one, features mainland actress Chow Chun from Perhaps Love and Hollywood Hong Kong, and Ye Chow, Q impersonation, me. He plays two roles in the film, by the way, I heard just recently. Michelle Yao is in it. Andy On, mainland actor, I assume. Guo Xiaodong, not the person I've heard of. So, and old school favorites, Gordon Liu and Leung Gaiyang, also is in the film. Beardy.
And Baldy.
Exactly. that would be like the first start of a very lame DVD cover in the West, you know.
Yes.
Baldy, Beardy, True Legend. or a bootleg, you know, or a cheap bootleg. Mm-hmm. And as a final note, and which makes the movie very, let's say, hip, so certain scenes, action scenes, are shot in 3D. There's no big details on that as of yet, as far as I could see, which is good, because you don't build up anticipation as such, you know. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they can do something new with that. And on the subject of the action scenes, I'd like to quote about what to expect from Woo-bin himself, as found in a news article. I think it was a translation that someone posted on the Kung Fu Cinema forums. So I'll read out here. When choreographing the martial arts It's partly quote, partly text from the article. So, when choreographing the martial arts sequences, Yuen Woo-ping approaches Drunken Fist from a new angle. Apart from more modern elements, Yuen Woo-ping is discarding all fixed forms as well as the various fanciful names accompanying each of the moves. And I believe this is the quote here from Yuen Woo-ping. The action here will be more realistic. Begasu will fight based on instincts, delivering whatever blows that come to his mind, following his heart completely, how to hit, how to block, how to stand up, how to give the enemy a back thrust, all acting according to circumstances, no posing whatsoever. I kind of like that. And he talks about on the lack of talent in the action film industry as well. Yuen Woo-ping regrets that there aren't any new martial arts directors in particular to take over the mantle. The quote from him goes, "No one is learning this in Hong Kong anymore. They feel that it's too tough. Better focus on academic studies. Shame on them. Don't learn other things. You can't earn a living with Kung Fu, and it's so arduous. The hope of the future lies in the mainland, for there are many talented wushu practitioners in the mainland, and their choreographers are very creative. But you have to recruit them and train them in that creativity." And end quote. And I don't think that that personally is such a bad thing, because that's the way we're going now, because there are co-productions taking place with the mainland anyway. So if you can, you know, tap into the creativity of wushu performers and choreographers, you know, you could get still a fairly bright future with martial arts cinema.
Yeah.
Because it's that kind of thing. Action choreographers in Hong Kong came up through, you know, through the Peking Opera schools and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, and that's not happening right now, because the Peking Opera schools are basically
gone.
Yeah, basically gone. Yeah, and it was that case when the likes of Jackie Chan and Sam Hung graduated. If you all go to believe a movie like Painted Faces, the main theme of that was basically that school disappearing forever and ever. They were sort of a last class, a last hope for the tradition. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of a sad point in real life and in that movie, Painted Faces. Any thoughts before we move on to talking points as such?
Not much other than what you've mentioned already. Because if we're going to discuss the film some more,
Might as well. I mean, it's your experience with early Yuen Woo-ping. Were you like had early exposure to Drunken Master, Naked Eagle, Shadow, or that came a while to your collecting?
That really did just.
There are movies that have been readily available in the UK. So Made in Hong Kong put out the dubbed tapes of them in the 90s.
Yep, they were basically, well, that was my first exposure to those films, was through obviously the Hong Kong Legend labels.
That's right. The Hong Kong Legends DVDs, I forgot about, but you're right. In the early 2000, I think.
Mm-hmm. Started off with collecting films such as Once Upon a Time in China 3, Miracles. It was actually basically buying a lot of old used rentals. Mm-hmm. That's where I found like a lot of Hong Kong Legends at dirt cheap prices.
Oh, cool.
And I was just buying them, and I'd gotten Snake and Eagle Shadow first, but it wasn't until probably about 3 or 4 years later until I'd actually got hold of Drunken Master.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that was is just availability, and it was that was at the time where I wasn't too keen on ordering movies over the internet. That and the prices weren't exactly, well, DVDs were dear then. You were still looking to pay at least £10 for something.
Yeah.
But I loved watching Snake and Eagle Shadow first. But, well, not at first. Obviously, at first you're taken back because it's not. You're not watching powerful martial arts.
Mm.
Like, this is when you're really exposed to the, well, as you said, like the poses, where it is really snake style, eagle style. So they do all the swooping, and then it cuts to a long shot, and it looks like they're just practicing techniques and just walking backwards. exchanging blows, but not really doing punches, just blocking each move, so it doesn't look powerful, but it's
more effective than anything else. When Jackie stumbles around drunk, he's it's the supreme technique against the likes of Wang Zhengli,
exactly.
Especially in Dragon Master.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of Simon Yun's character, how much of an impression did he leave with you, or were you too blown away by other elements to notice him?
He was obviously one of the major characters of the film, but I couldn't say I was blown away by the character. I wouldn't say I actively looked out films because of him, but in the UK, when they did do the dirt cheap DVDs that were actually just bad old movies dubbed, I did pick up the title, I think it was Revenge of the Drunken Master.
Yeah, it should be one of those, yeah.
Mm-hmm, where it had one of the photos of him, dressed in, of course it said Star and Sam the Seed. He had the long hair, the old tattered clothes, and he was in just a martial arts stance. And when you watch the film, he's this short, bald man.
Of course.
And gets killed off. It's like, okay, and then it's just like his student goes, probably Jack Long goes to get revenge.
Yeah, sounds like one of Joseph Crowe's movies, but not The World of Drunken Master, because that cameo is just a demonstration by Simon Yun and a narrator talking about Drunken Fist. It really is a bad demonstration. I shouldn't say bad, because I know shit all about martial arts, but it looks really slow and clunky, and but obviously it's an old man it's really worthless. It's like a thing where, okay, we have him, we can shoot something, poster. Poster cleared, poster done, because he's on every fucking release of The World of Drunken Master, and it's that 30-second cameo, and the movie is decent, but far from Joseph Crowe's best. Despite having Jack Long and Lee Min in the movie, it's still one of his weak ones.
Mm-hmm. This was a film where he was killed off by, I think, getting a pencil to the ear.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Almost creative for a kung fu film.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was flung across the room and just gone.
Well, hope nothing bad happens to me today. Down. Wonder what that film is. So if you know what that film is that Stu was talking about, write in to podcastonfire@googlemail.com or post it on the forum. Because I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that. But he for a while there, those 2-3 years after Snake and Eagle, Shadow and Dragon Master broke, he got typecast as that character. And he died in, I think it was 80 or 81. When was Magnificent Butcher? Because he started that film, but didn't finish it, and Fan Mei Sheng replaced him.
Mm-hmm. So, that was one of the really cool features about the Hong Kong Legend DVD of Magnificent Butcher. They have still photos of Yin Su Tin as Beggar on set.
Yeah.
They actually had the lobby cards. They were a hidden feature on the DVD, so it showed him in costume, him on set.
In that costume, though, no difference whatsoever.
Exactly.
But
it could have been easily 10 from any other movie.
We found a rare photo!
Hong Kong Legends exclusive, never seen before! We found it in some temple underground!
Having said that, I think Fan Mei Sheng is very memorable in Magnificent Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
For martial arts, Simon Yun would have been doubled anyway. Mm-hmm. And Fan Mei Sheng is doubled for a moment or two in that film. But still a very memorable film because of that. And it's good that such a tragedy can still produce a classic in the end.
Mm-hmm.
It was not like the movie was shelved for a number of years, and before Yuen Wo Ping got the strength again to make movies. I'm sure that it was something his father would have encouraged, being in the movie industry for so long before. And but yeah, that's due for a rewatch. Magnificent Butcher, by the way,
that is a classic.
Yeah. But Did you have seen Dance of the Drunk Mantis?
I did. I rented it a couple of years ago. It was a good film, but of course it doesn't leave much of an impression from what we've actually seen already.
No, I mean it's the action elements are good, but it's quite an annoying film too because of two things. I think is it Yunya Chor in the lead, the Wonder Yuns, or not Yun? Not I'm gonna look that up. Sorry.
There's a lot of Yoons kicking about.
Yeah, it's not Yun Ching Ye, I think. Well, it might be actually. It might be Yun Chun Ye in that role, in that lead. The Yuns are all fun to follow, by the way. Anyway, Dean Shek does his best to annoy the hell out of you in that film, and it's a tough film to take. But it has memorable action moments, memorable moments between Wang Jiangli and Simon Yun and his double, and also Yan Shi Quan or Yam Saigun from Once Upon a Time in China. Plays the iron. Well, it's basically the master that Yuan Biu follows in Once Upon a Time in China. He plays this sick fist master, basically, in Dance of the Drunk Mantis. It's a really cool character image. So Yuan Woo-ping got a lot of mileage out of that film. Very memorable images. But yeah, it's basically those movies and. When I saw them eventually, I think I was, especially in Snake and Eagle Shadow, I think the interplay between Jackie and Simon is so good. And it has warmth as well. That father-son warmth, even though they're not father and son, but it's in Simon's face during a few scenes where he wants to take care of this guy. And sadly, this might be, sacrilegious, but I didn't think the chemistry between those two was matched at all in Drunken Master. I love Drunken Master, but I think that chemistry is quite lacking. But it's really because of a great, superb standard set in the first movie that I was kind of disappointed. But it's still majorly fun. It's no two ways about it, but I find myself returning to Snake and Eagle Shadow more often,
Yes,
to be
I'm the
honest.
same.
Essentially, talking points surrounding True Legend and its release. What I wrote up here when talking about little, this is an action movie. There's a martial arts movie being released now, and that's not commonplace in Hong Kong cinema compared to them. So, in all honesty, when you try and measure the pulse of the Hong Kong cinema community, you hear it go up whenever any action seems to be offered up, modern or old school. Pulse is likely to go down if Edmund Pang is mentioned or Herman Yao. You know what I mean? Johnny To, pulse is quite all right though, I think. But no wonder that the pulse goes up because so many people still are infatuated with Hong Kong cinema and its action. And so you have the pulse going up when SBL comes out, Invisible Target, even beforehand. It's a modern action movie. What's it about? Dragon Tiger Gate obviously was anticipated, and there's a lot of fans, you being one really hardcore fan. Odd fucking core fan.
Say what?
Dragon Tiger Gate Scholar, sir.
Well, that's just a another notch into my belt.
Yeah. So just gather them up and hear all my titles. Old school martial arts, obviously, that we're talking about here, is obviously got an upswing via movies like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Huge upswing, international upswing. And I don't know if it should be said that it paved the way for the likes of Fearless and Ip Man, but nevertheless, you have examples. It's been embraced, especially Fearless. It's such a great movie. Movie. Not a good act. No, just a solid action movie. It's such a good movie. And eyebrows gets raised, and they should be. My opinion on this, you can state yours or post mine if you like, is it's a blessing that we don't get as much action movies nowadays. Because it puts a nice focus on being on Hong Kong filmmakers and working with mainland filmmakers and American money, if you will. It puts a nice focus on being competitive in a global sense, trying to make a movie that will still be yours, still be uniquely yours, but still be very much adjusted to an international audience. And you don't go out and shoot a finale at that hillside in the new territories anymore. you have to bring something more. And certainly there is a focus in the various examples that I mentioned on the delivery of action. Yuen Woo-ping certainly has had a hand in that, choreographing Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Fearless, among other things. Donnie Yen, obviously, is a hot name as an actor and action director, SPL. Dragon Tiger Gate, obviously, starring in Ip Man, as everyone knows.
Yep.
And I guess I got to ask you then, what's your view on how Hong Kong cinema or Hong Kong mainland cinema, because again, there are common that co-production take place. What's your opinion on how it has evolved since we had loads of action every week in Hong Kong cinemas, compared to how the action trend goes now?
I wouldn't be surprised if Hong Kong has basically taken upon themselves to actually become more like Hollywood when it comes to movies. Like, action sequences are now well thought out. There's got to be like risk assessments. There's got to be like people doing stunts before the proper people do the stunts. I think everything's been taken, like, everyone's taken a step back now and had a look at things. It's not a case of saying, right, who wants to fall from there? And then it just choose one of the people waiting to get paid. It is just a case of, like, nowadays they can't make these movies every week because it's like, this shit takes a long time now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when you get a great payoff from it. Like, things like Fearless and Ip Man, it's like, these are going to be great, memorable films. It's gotten to the point, well, Fearless was done great internationally. Ip Man's been released internationally. It got limited cinema runs, but it's on DVD, it's on Blu-ray. So that's it, made its mark. We're not going to lose that thing anytime soon.
Yeah.
And definitely, I think, obviously, when Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon won, like, this, that, and the next thing, I think it was basically like a green light for every other director that thought about doing something similar. Because, like, if he could get away with doing it and make it huge. And then Zhang Yimou done, like, his trilogy of films.
Hero, House of Flying Daggers, Curse of the Golden Flower.
So, I think it hasn't gotten to the stage because, obviously, as you said before, when there was like a film every week, you could find that it could be getting stale.
Yeah.
It
was too much. I mean, there so many shot outdoors movies that, you know, you have to be a really hardcore fan to wade through all of that to find the gems. Even though, like, the Shaw Brothers obviously produced big movies, great looking movies that could compete internationally or be sold internationally on a regular basis.
But it has really gotten to a stage where you could almost say that it is the same for today. Like, for the epic outdoor movies where it's Battle of Wits, certain parts of The Myth, of course, Curse of the Flying Dagger, no.
The
Zhang Yimou movies, like, there is, like, even when it crosses over to other countries, like Musa the Warrior, Seven Swords, like, you could do a montage and you could think they were all probably filmed in the same place, but it could become bland, but you really have to think, well, it is, as you said, you have to find the gems amongst them.
Yeah, I think I'm like that, even though it's not on a conscious level as such. There's, you know, which big epic that I haven't seen do you choose? And I mean, I got turned off by the likes of Hero. I didn't like that at all. And, you know, Redcliffe looks good, but it's still, you know...
It's still basically 5 hours.
I'm not turned off by that, but it's just like... It is a bit too much, and that's why I like that even though people cry out and complain and, you know, that there's not enough martial arts or modern-day action in Hong Kong cinema, because times have changed, and I welcome the focus, the concentration to deliver good stuff. And small movies can be made, of course, and be made to look good, but I think action has sort of passed that time. As you said, nowadays they won't go the cheap route and the fast route in making these insane action movies. And also the point of that you said to bring them like closer to Hollywood, if you will. Certain movies that we discussed, Crouching Tiger, Fearless Ip Man, they haven't been, you know, patterned after something else entirely, brought into Hong Kong and the mainland and poorly copied. Still, you know, as much unique. Well, I would say they are uniquely Chinese movies, obviously. And they aren't like, oh, that section of movie, that 10-20 minute section, that is so Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like that. So I so welcome a lower production rate nowadays, and please, because I have no time to keep up with the low production rate even, so please don't take it any higher. Keep it as it is, please. And I'd rather, because it's harder for me to wade through that recent output compared to any 80s or 90s output. I can wade through 20 minutes easily, 20 movies easily. You know what I mean? From back then, but it's such a different feeling, obviously. Such a different era. Mm-hmm. But so True Legend is very welcome in that regard, as, you know, it doesn't feel like yet another, because this year, or the last year, it isn't the 10th in line of, let's say, movies of this kind released during the last 6 months. It stands out, and in a good way, not because it's a rare Yuma Ping movie, a martial arts movie, but in a good way. So I like this trend.
Yeah.
Personally. What I also like is that Yuma Ping is directing it and he's being the storyteller.
Right.
And that's not necessarily been seen before. You know, Drunken Master, Snake and Eagle Shadow, I don't look down on them as movies, you know, poor script writing, poor directing, they are perfectly sufficient. But again, we're in a new era. You have to kick it up a notch. And Yuma Ping is, you know, it's definitely his biggest movie yet. And I see it as a new foreign task in many ways. So he's not a Ronnie Yu who directed Fearless, because Ronnie Yu, he'd been directing, you know, a variety of movies before, even though they were action tinged.
Bride of fucking Chucky.
Yeah, it's nothing wrong with Bride of Chucky. I like it. It's fun.
Never seen it, but still.
But Bride with White Hair, The Phantom Lover, great examples of Ronnie Yu's, you know, direction as a, you know, as an actual director. Even though they have fantasy elements and big elements, but so it's going to be interesting to see if Wu Ping is, you know, he's obviously taking on the challenge, but if he's sliding comfortably into that challenge, because he's returning to a character that I guess you can argue is seemingly close to his heart. You know, it's having made at least one movie with that character being named, the Beggar Sue character, and being played by his father. Obviously, that's close to his heart. So, but your thoughts, Stu, on him taking on such a big project as the action director and storyteller?
I welcome it. It's really just, well, it's not a bad thing to me. A lot of the times when it comes to films directed by, written by, action directing, starring, and it all happens to be the same bloke, a lot of the time that never phases me. Sure, it could be in the fact that it's this guy's ego, like he's got all this behind him, but this doesn't really faze me.
Yeah, certainly not a cynical view as such, and immediately, because I know that of you, and you immediately don't put forth any concern. Oh no, he's not directed a movie like this before. Oh no.
It always happens just to be the, like, well, my opinions only really get formed once you see the trailer, and it's like, if it looks like really hang, and if it looks like, fuck, this kind of looks bad, and then you can look up the facts and say, well, maybe he's done too much, maybe it is, he's decided to do this, that, and the next thing when he should have took a step back, maybe let someone else done this. But from the looks of the trailer, like, this just looks like, oh, like, this is just a passionate project for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, it was going to look big, we all knew that, but obviously there's signs of, you know, based on the synopsis, the story takes different turns, and it's an all action-oriented all the time, especially when Vincent Zhao becomes degraded in life or demoted in life. You know, the only concern is of mine. I don't like the beard. Vincent Chow's beard that he has in the film, it looks kind of ropey, but that's not an issue that I'm going to carry with me and like be annoyed by and have to, you know, jam a knife into my leg just not in order to not mention it, you know what I mean? but I like that it's a new foreign task for Wu Ping, and we simply can't and shouldn't form an opinion of how it will go, because I like this unknown aspect of it. It really could mean Wu Ping breaking new ground for himself and breaking out in a big, big way.
Aye.
And that's fun to, you know, you don't have any preconceived notions of this, and I haven't got any. Looking at the forums and stuff, where people is, you know, oh no, it's the guy who directed The Red Wolf. He can't direct this movie, you know. So he's proven that he's not one of those directors that only could shoot one of those outdoors martial arts movies, you know. Shown a lot more than that. Vincent Zhao. Choi Manchuk. Ciao and show. Ciao. What do you like him?
Of course. I remember
the very sparse career in films of Vincent Zhao.
I remember exclaiming to a friend saying, this guy's going to be big as Jet Li. That was like after probably my first, well, not okay, let's say my 10th viewing of The Black Sheep Affair.
you're quite into that film, yeah?
Well, it is a good film, and there is stages where I can't remember how it happened, but it was like the fire to the main mansion at the end, and I'm thinking if they got all soaked up, but there's a point when one went to grab the other, and it was like this squeezy balloon sound effect happened as he slipped off his arm. It's like, whoa, okay.
I should state on air that it's a fun action film, uneven to watch as a movie, but I've watched about a million uneven movies and gladly watched them, so I don't mind the Black Sheep Affair at all. Even though earlier in the film I said another meltdown matches it, but that's just being, you know, if anything, it's Andrew Lynn that's very much memorable in that film. The bad guy of The Black Sheep Affair.
Aye.
That's interesting that was your first exposure. Did you have a chance to go back in the timeline then?
I really only followed the UK releases that were given.
Yeah.
So it was first Black Sheep Affair, then it was Fist Power.
Oh, it's a latter film. Supposed to be so-so.
It was pretty so-so. I think that was Sam Lee, Anthony Wong, some unknown chick.
Yeah.
And Then I think I'd gotten a hold of
Body
Weapon.
Body Weapon, yeah.
Yeah, I got a hold of that later on, and that didn't leave much of an effect. And then
his like sole exploitation movie that he appeared in. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have any sex scenes in
no,
that.
No, he just happens to be the hero.
Yeah.
And of course, Once Upon a Time in China 5, which I quite enjoyed, and I think I had acquired a copy of. Oh wait, no, actually, it was a time when I was in England and I visited tons of fun, like old co-host Jim.
Yeah.
I'd spent some time with him, and we'd noticed one of the channels down there was actually showing Once Upon a Time in China 4.
Right.
So I got to see the tail end of that movie. But
with all the lion dancing, it'll be very elaborate lion dancing of that film.
Once Upon a Time in China 3, again, but.
Yeah, essentially was a kicked up a notch, but kind of tiring to watch his first movie. Having said that, you know, out of all, you know, the posters for the various Once Upon a Time in China movies were quite similar, you know, the big sun in the background and Wong Fei-hung in the foreground. Aye. But I liked the one for the fourth movie a lot better. It was basically the same, but him striking a pose of some sort. And I really, really dug that. It's something I want on my wall. I think Green Snake has been available in the UK.
Oh, but, yes. I have seen Green Snake.
Which is lively, Choi Hak fantasy. Yeah.
Yep. You can't blame me for not remembering Vincent in that film.
It's, yeah.
For some other very memorable performances.
It's he plays a monk of some sort. I think he battles a green and white snake, but I might be wrong. I love Green Snake, but it's one of those movies that is just a fireworks of look at that. Oh, look at that. Woo! You know, oh, look at that snake. It looks really, really cheesy, but I love it. You know, I'm like that all throughout the film. But despite this rather limited set of movies that he made, although he was really prolific between 93 and 95, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies at that time. It's a fair amount. He had a buzz about him, and I guess the buzz was akin to what you were saying, that this guy's going to be big as Jet Li. And it never really happened.
Yeah.
I've always gotten the impression that he's got the approval of fans. Respect of fans, even though he got to follow Jet Li in a role that Jet Li really
built.
He built and defined it rather well. And the Once Upon a Time in China 4. Exactly. But the fourth and fifth movie in that series, they are fun in their own right, but in my mind, I separate them from the first three because the first three had a story through line. Especially the Jet Li, Rosamund Kwan characters. They had their story going on through three movies. And the fourth and fifth, so, you know, here we go again. It's fun enough, but then if you separate them from the trilogy, the first three movies, I think you can view them in a better light. But all good fun in their own right. And for Vincent, I probably saw Fong Sai-yuk first, but didn't realize he was in it because it's a minor role, although it's a cool fighting role. Mm-hmm. Don't remember, what was he the main bad guy or was the... I don't think there was any more bad guys in that film. I think he was
It was pretty much him.
Yeah, but I think the first exposure probably was Blade.
Yes.
Which is a great classic box office flop at the time, but it's a great classic, and it brings me to the point that I like Vincent's presence, but he can't carry a movie on his own. No, he's not a poster name as such, and not he's got good presence, but not enough to, you know, just cast him and everything will be all right kind of a thing. You needed visionaries behind him, and thankfully he had visionaries behind him on quite a regular basis, the main one being Choi Hak, who directed him Once Upon a Time in China 5, The Blade, Chinese Feast, you know, three times and all. And he has a pretty decent authoritarian presence, because Wong Fei-hung obviously obviously requires that, you know. But I think the soul aspect I like, because I'm not good at judging, you know, he's a great fighter on screen, you know, he commands the screen. I'm not really good at remembering that or judging that. So the aspect that I find most attractive in him is his warmth. He has a warmth about him. He can play, you know, has played bad guys, but he can play a really, you know, sweet guy, and a human quality shine through. Blade is certainly a performance where there's a lot of emotions involved in that, and he's just awesome in that. And that movie is totally awesome, and you know, one of the most intense movies of that kind. Really messy camera work that once works, and just a gritty, dirty, rusty world.
Yes.
In that loose retake of One on Swordsman, just a fucking amazing film. And his end fight with Hung Yan Yan, which you can't really see.
Exactly, because of the red, the dark.
Yeah, well, it's not as that it's dark, it's just intense. The camera's all over the place, but it's just awesome. Mm-hmm. It's just awesome. Again, going back to the warmth, I think one of his underrated performances is in a Chinese New Year film, which True Legend is as well, and it's in the Chinese Feast, a Choi Hark movie. He essentially plays Wong Fei-hung, but he's a cook, a very kind cook, a very, you know, again, the warmth, who nurses back Kenny B's fallen chef to health again. It's a wonderful... Kenny B is great in that film as well. He's obviously become an alcoholic, and he's lost his taste buds, if you will. So Vincent is part of this very wacky scene where I guess it's Leslie Cheung, Anita Yoon, and him, you know, training his taste buds again. It's just jamming shit down his throat through this funnel. And it's just great fun. And Vincent is really, really good in that film. It was cool that movie was sync sound, because they mixed the dialects, the languages. So he spoke Mandarin in that film, and most of the other cast obviously Cantonese. So it was fun to hear his actual voice for once. It might be the great timing for him as well, in terms of breaking out more as a movie star. His TV career, I'm sure, has been good enough, having been in the Once Upon a Time in China series for, you know, a season or two or three, I don't know. But I think he did the Seven Swords TV series, if I'm not mistaken. I just thought of that now. And I'm fairly sure that was the case. And if he had a part in every episode, I'm not too sure, but that series is out on Taiseng DVD, so you can check that out. But I think that was the case, and that got, I think, better notices than the actual movie Seven Swords. Mm-hmm. Because the TV show obviously had time to elaborate on a lot of stuff, and I know you like Seven Swords, but to me it was hard to follow.
Right.
And that turned me off even when the good bits happened. You know, I was like, who's that? Oh, fight now. Oh, what? There was some story about a horse or something that was like, where did this come from? That horse seems significant. I don't know. maybe do for a rewatch sometime. But so it's going to be, again, fun to know. We don't know how this performance will work out, but he is obviously, he might do a Jet Li in a way, you know, the Fearless performance, which was really surprising to me, because Jet Li started out as really, you know, played a real asshole, you know, ignorant asshole, and then had to go through that journey. He did really well in regards to that. You never saw Jet Li. That was not like Jet Li's 10th performance of that kind. It was a breakout performance, in my opinion. So you might see Vincent go through that as well and do hopefully do really, really well, especially when the character, you know, gets grounded and lets go of the ways that, you know, the luxurious lifestyle when he gets to be a beggar, basically. Mm. I think that's opportunity for Vincent to have that warmth, that lowly warmth, if you will, and also break out into ass-kicking mode, if you will. Mm. And obviously here, you know, this is a guy who has, you know, the skills to perform this on screen and things like that. And are you equally in terms of that opinion as well, that you know, that this might be a star now, or
I think so. I think we might actually see him in definitely more movies after this.
Yeah.
It may not be all these big epic martial arts movies now, but I could see him getting used more, or at least appearing more. Maybe not as leading actor, but definitely this is, because he had done his brief stint and then it went back to television.
Yeah, sure.
And obviously, well, I wouldn't be surprised if he'd done more television as well.
Yeah.
But...
Well, maybe he's comfortable with that career as well, because I haven't got any solid info at all in terms of how he's done on television, how his performance has been. So again, if you have any information about Vincent's career, put podcast on fire at googlemail.com.
Yep, I'm pretty sure he did have a part in the Storm Riders television series.
Right, exactly. Was that shortly after the first movie was released? Or?
Yep, I think that was a series that went on after the movie.
Right, exactly.
And yeah, I'm pretty certain he was one of the leads.
Do you know if that was a new character or one of the characters Aaron and Ekin
played? He was picking up one of those roles.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. So the trailers that there are enclosed in the podcast post, there are two trailers released at this time, maybe a third now that it's opened, but it looks very waifu, obviously, by the looks of it. It looks very fantasy-like. The fight scene or training scene with Ye Chao looks like it's basically set in heaven or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'll be very brief on this. What I like, you know, give us a clear look at the action and excitement, and you're halfway there. Mm-hmm. I don't shake the fucking camera, but I don't think Yuen Woo-ping is that undisciplined. Mm-hmm. He doesn't come from that school, and hopefully you can connect it nicely to the story and emotions in the story as well. So that's essentially my hope for the action. So what impression did you get of looking at the trailers?
At first, when you actually come to the full trailer, not the teaser, the full trailer, the first shot of the action you see, it's basically almost, he is almost breakdancing.
Right, Dad.
It is a point where he does like a single handstand, does a kick, but then he goes into like, it just looks like breakdancing. At first I was like, you are shitting me. Huh. Old kung fu film with...
It's a mismatched couples 2 in the Qing Dynasty.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, fuck you. But no. That was just like this brief shot. It was obviously, I don't know, we've not seen the film yet. He could be just doing this to counter someone else's style that has countered all his moves. You never know.
Sure.
Like, there is truth behind these moves. Yeah. But... it was cool when noticing the cast list and it sees that Andy On was mentioned in it, and I was like, right, I was thinking, what kind of Andy On are we getting? Are we getting the Andy On from 5 years ago, where it's him being like New Police Story, Fatal Contact, I think it's Fatal Contact.
Or Fatal Move, or...
the one where he was basically going against Wu Jing and had Ronald Cheng. And he was one of the bad guys in that. And then I thought, more recently, he has become more of the actor. Like, he was in Mad Detective.
Last Gun. Do you remember that from Mad Detective?
Mm-hmm. as well as, he had brief parts in both election movies. But in the trailer, he is basically, looks like the super evil kung fu villain. In the sense that, well, I think he's actually supposed to be a eunuch.
Well, he's certainly painted in white.
He's got the pasty pale complexion, and then obviously it cuts to him kicking ass. So there's your great bad guy to match Vincent against. So I'll look forward to seeing the full fights, the final fights. Yeah. There's always going to be the great fight about in the middle, and it's really films like these that should really encourage me to write more of those STFU posts on the forum, on the website.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it looks great.
And obviously Yuen Wo Ping has conveyed a sense of great action in the new millennium via Fearless, which is it's clear looking and it's extravagant and waifu, and there's a CGI here and there. The film is sped up in here and there, I'm sure, but it's cool. It's good. You can use those lazy tools that are available today and still make them work to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because you always see that, slows down the film and then it goes fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think there's evidence of that in Fearless, if I remember correctly, but it's still cool. It's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And with the personnel that, despite being older than they were in the 90s, if you have skilled personnel, you can still make cool martial arts action in the new millennium. And again, look at Fearless. Jet Li is not in his athletic prime, I'm sure. I mean, compared to Shaolin Temple, obviously, it's not exactly as agile as that. And Vincent Shao is older than his breakthrough, if you will, 15 years ago. But still, it can be made to work in no doubling and no hiding it with silly wire work or shaky camera. I would be very surprised if this all of a sudden turn into a let's say Transporter 3-esque editing job. And I'm saying Transporter 3 because I loved first, I loved the second. Transporter 3, I couldn't make out anything. It was just too much cutting. You couldn't see anything. But again, it's Yuen Wo Ping. And Yuen Wo Ping not being probably intruded upon, by another director. Obviously not another director saying, it's really, really convey excitement if you shake the camera and tilt it.
Mm-hmm.
They do that in Hollywood. Oh, Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go there.
Ah, it looks really cool, especially after I finish vomiting into the sick bag, but yeah.
It's all, I don't get much, excitement as such through trailers nowadays, but, it looks, rock solid. Technically, and the action looks cool, and it's hopefully going to be a bearable movie in the end, Doc. So I guess that's my summary of it all, because I don't go in with preconceived notions, which you shouldn't do, and hopefully very few viewers do that. But the trailers don't oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
Not nowadays.
It has to be a trailer where you can actually see something, where you have to actually see the movie.
Not a low-res trailer on YouTube.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Mike Leader, and I was one of the casting directors for Sohat Yi, a.k.a. True Legend.
So at this point, without revealing anything, without spoiling anything, what can you tell us and the audience about what to expect from True Legend?
With True Legend, you can expect the return of Yuen Wo Ping to the director's chair, which is long overdue, some incredible action sequences featuring Vincent Zhao, a.k.a. Zhao Wen Zhao, or Jumun Jerk in Cantonese, making a long overdue return to the big screen. Cameo appearance by Michelle Yeoh, the lovely Zhao Shun, an incredible performance by Andy On Ji Yit, who plays pretty much the villain of the piece. The incredible Jung Lu Sha from Co Web and Bad Blood, who makes a great appearance in the movie. Kung Lee, who plays a mountain bandit, the K-1 and kickboxing champion recently seen in Bodyguards and Assassins. You'll also see a group of motley crew of Westerners that I assembled, including Conan Stevens, former WWE wrestlers Sylvester the Bear Turkey, John Heidenreich, Matt Weiss, who used to be in WWE under the name Luther Reigns, and former French Foreign Legion soldier turned kickboxer turned actor and action choreographer Dominic Vandenberg. And, of course, the late, great David Carradine in one of his final roles. And Mr. Kenneth's favourite actor of all time, Mr. Jay Chou.
In two roles.
Hey, when you've got Jay Chou, he's good enough for everything. And, plenty of action, including some 3D, some breakdancing, and lots of that wonderful thing called drunken boxing. But no, it was incredible experience. I mean, working with Yuen Woo-ping is fantastic. It was my second full project with Yuen Woo-ping after Fearless. And it was a great honor to get the call in early 2008 to come and work on the movie and to be involved from pre-production, through production, through casting, through script revisions, and then through the shooting. It was fantastic. And I mean, Yuen Woo-ping delivers in every way. I mean, it was great. He had most of the Yuen family on set. We had, you know, Sonny Yuen was there, Yuen Yat Chor was there, Yuen San Yi was there. It was fantastic. A lot of Yuen Woo-ping's new team were on the movie as well. Fantastic. I mean, epic production. We shot in some incredible locations, including like the Yellow Mountains, which are incredibly beautiful but incredibly hard to get to. And shooting in Beijing in freezing temperatures was hard going, but good fun. And it's as I said, it was just a great experience.
It's indeed long overdue that Vincent returns to the screen, but mainly for me, Yuen Woo-ping, and seeing we discussed on the show that there's an excitement in there, at least on this show, that he's directing a big vehicle such as this, and it seems like it's way different than what he's done before. But when I thought about it, it's you know, he's put together some rather complex movies before, and I'll happily put the Miracle Fighters and the Drunk God movies in that category as complex movies, because that's not standard material. So do you think it is a leap for him? Is it a very new territory for Yuen Woo-ping to handle?
I think it's a mixture. He's revisiting a lot of stuff from his past in the movie. I mean, you might pick up on a few references to like the Shaolin Drunkard and the Taoism Drunkard and the entire Drunken Master series. And also several references to mismatched couples.
Yeah, there was breakdancing in one of the trailers, or something akin to that. I believe Stu spoke about that.
Oh, no. So, I mean, we were on set one day, and I was showing some of the young stunt guys mismatched couples. And then Yuen Woo-ping was laughing and telling me that I just needed to wait until the next day. What do you mean? He said it would be mismatched couples, the next generation, and the next day there was breakdancing on the set. Yeah, you know.
And a lot Which of IR humor.
I mean, it's basically exactly that. Vincent Zhao's drunken master, when he's drunk, he dances. Oh. And he lets loose with some breakdancing, and to very good effect. And it was just very funny, because, you know, mismatched couples has always been like a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
And I remember even talking with Donnie that there's a lot of really good stuff in that movie. There's some very outlandish moments, but there's also some really good physical moments and some incredible action.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, just exactly, it just gets labeled as the breakdance movie. And yeah, it's with this film, I mean it was funny, because when I first came on board, it was still when everyone was saying it was, there was a lot of talk about it was going to be a docudrama or some kind of like very heavy reference or tribute to his father Simon Yuen Siu Tian. And I think it was just people took the wrong end of the stick, that they heard it was about the Drunken Master character and just assumed that it was somehow going to be, you know, some semi-autobiographical or something. I mean, it's basically, it's another take on the origin of the, you know, the Drunken Master, how that character came to be. And exactly like you said, Yuen Woo-ping has directed a lot of movies that people forget about that were complicated. Movies like Fire Dragon. It's not the greatest movie, but that's a complicated film, and there's some incredible situations. It's just for a long time he had just been concentrating on the action.
Yeah.
And then for this film, I mean, and he's been talking about making a return to directing for some time. when we were doing The Mummy, there was still talk about the Kung Fu version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs for Disney, which I was hoping to get on if they ever make it, because it just would be fun.
You never know how that might turn up. It sounds cheesy on paper, but, you know.
Well, it's the same way a lot of people, you know, had so much flack against the Forbidden Kingdom, and the Forbidden Kingdom's a good little bit of fun. It's not the most serious movie of all time, but it's, I think the problem is a lot of people are judging movies too, how to say, the wrong way. I mean, even at the press conference for, like, you know, Forbidden Kingdom, Jet Li summed it up, this is a movie for the international market. Mm. Yeah, it's not a movie for the most diehard Kung Fu movie fan of all time. You know, if you've only seen one or two Hong Kong movies, or you've heard about them, you look at The Forbidden Kingdom, you go, okay, well, Jackie Chan's playing a drunken master, Jet Li's playing a monk, there's, you know, there's a girl with white hair, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, and I think that's the thing, people, you know, a lot of time people are reading the wrong things into it and getting, it's how to say, you know, sometimes people, their expectation is raised too high to almost a ridiculous level, that there's no way the film could ever live up to that expectation.
Yeah.
And then, you know, unfortunately, because there is a lot of time people just making stuff up and putting it on the internet, or, you know, stuff gets misquoted or misreferenced, you know, people are expecting one thing, when they get the other, it's very easy to shoot it down because, oh, you know, like Forbidden Kingdom, you know, because it was in English, people had to go at it. If it had been in Chinese, then somehow it would have been a better movie.
I wasn't too... It was fun to watch, but it didn't make a lasting impression on me. But that wasn't because I went in with, you know, this is going to be as good as the movies it references. But it still was kind of brave to have the movie be partly in Chinese.
Exactly. I mean... And it is amazing how far audiences around the world have come. I mean, when I first started watching Hong Kong movies, you know, we all fell in love with the classic English dubs. And then, you know, slowly when I was going up to Chinatown and picking up, like, VHSs and everything of newer movies, it was harder to get the English dub, and I'd start watching the subtitled versions, you know. But now, you know, I never thought there'd be a day where you could go into your local, you know, HMV or Tower Records, and there'd be a huge Asian film section where the films would be in original language with subtitles or the choice of an English dub. And I think, exactly, it's just, you know, certain audiences are much more open to subtitles. I mean, you know, in Europe, watching a subtitled movie is very, very common. It's, you know, whereas in America, it's always been that thing of, oh, well, the movie has to be dubbed into English. But it's the same way movies are dubbed into Chinese for Hong Kong or for China or for Japan. And people forget that. I mean, when Lethal Weapon 4 came out, there was a lot of controversy in Hong Kong because nobody had told Joel Silver that, you know, Beyond were going to record a single for the film for the Asian release.
Yeah.
And when Joel Silver saw the music video, he thought someone was ripping off his movie because nobody had consulted with him, you know, that for the Asian marketing, we're going to use Beyond as the kick. I mean, it's just... Like I said, you know, Forbidden Kingdom, it's not a classic, but it's great fun. And to me, if it makes people, if it brings in 20 more people who are then going to go and investigate, okay, I've heard about The Bride with White Hair, I like this character. Let me go off and find this movie, The Bride with White Hair. Or let me go back and look at some of Jackie Chan's earlier work or Jet Li's earlier work. That's great. You know, it's just...
Well, hopefully True Legend will play a minor part, a big part, a medium part in you know, catching some new fans seeking out Yuen Woo Ping's back catalogue, because it certainly is available in many shapes or forms, even the, you know, the insane movies, the drunk card movies.
I think that's the thing, you know, you can watch True Legend and then say, I want to hear more about the Drunken Master character, and you can pick up Snake and Eagle Shadow and Drunken Master and Dance of the Drunk Mantis and, you know, King of Beggars even, and other movies, and exactly, go back to those characters. You know, you can see, you know, Yuen Siu Tian in so many movies playing the Drunken Master character.
Yeah.
And now you know how he became that character.
Hopefully one thing that people will look for also is the back catalogue of the leading man, Vincent Chow. So it's kind of interesting discussing his career that never, you know, it seems sparse, the movie career, and it never and he never became that big star. But I was going to ask you, do you know if his TV career is anything but sparse?
No. I mean, the thing with Vincent Zhao, right, his name in Cantonese is Ju Manjiak, but he's from China. His Mandarin name is Zhao Wenzhao.
Yeah.
His English name is Vincent, so Vincent Zhao. When he made his debut in, you know, Fong Sai-yuk as Jet Li's enemy, he was only, I think, like 20 years old. And then he did a phenomenal job as the bad guy. And then when they gave him the role of Wong Fei-hung in Once Upon a Time in China Part 4, the problem is, one, he was far too young.
Yeah.
And two, you're stepping into Jet Li's shoes, and immediately you're being compared to Jet Li in his prime.
Yeah.
And the problem was, unfortunately, he came into the market at the tail end of the kung fu movie genre. He gives a great performance in Green Snake, which is a strange movie and not perfect and suffers from some terrible special effects, but I like the movie and think, you know, Maggie Jung and Joey Wong have never been sexier.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the problem was, you know, Vincent came in at the tail end of that market. He was playing the role that everyone associated with Jet Li. So to me, if you look at Once Upon a Time in China Part 4, it's okay.
Yeah.
I really like Once Upon a Time in China Part 5.
Yeah.
And then when he did the Once Upon a Time in China TV series, he really got a chance to stretch his acting muscles and have a better chance of developing a character.
Mm.
And that also includes the Eight Assassins episode, directed by Daniel Lee, who did What Price Survival, etc. And it's probably his best work as well.
Right.
Vincent then exactly fell into that thing of like movies like Black Sheep Affair, where he comes across in the action but doesn't come across so well in the dramatic side.
Mm.
Terrible movies like Body Weapon. The problem was, like a lot of actors, they didn't know how to use him. Whereas, you know, people forget that Wu Jing before SPL, and even now, Wu Jing does a hell of a lot of TV in China.
Mm.
And Vincent has done incredible TV series in China. Vincent did a Fist of Fury TV series in China with Yasuki Kurata as the villain. Wow. For producer Choi Si-ming back in about 1996. He did, you know, a really good Tai Chi series recently for TVB. He did, you know, Romance of Book and Sword for China TV. He's done a hell of a lot of very big TV series in China.
Mm.
And it's just one of the things that because he was introduced in such a big movie, everyone's almost like, oh, he's not working for Troy Hark anymore. He must be finished. You know, and unfortunately, yeah, I think even Vincent would admit that some of the movies he made were not movies you'd be proudly putting on your resume.
Mm.
But the thing is, sometimes it's the same thing that you don't know what movies were made. Like, I really don't know if when they were making Body Weapon, he was really told that the focus of the movie was going to be on Angie Jung's bosom and, you know, Clarence Ford will be teaching her how to be a woman. You know, sometimes the problem is you're brought in on a movie and you're told you're playing this character and you're not really aware of what the tone of the movie is going to be or what else is being shot. And I think, unfortunately, he just fell through the gap and people associated him. People seemed only to really want to accept him in traditional kung fu roles. And for a long time, exactly, he was just, you know, he was working in China on TV. I mean, he actually originally was up for Rush Hour 3. Him and Fan Siu Wong were both in the running, along with Henry Sonada, who eventually got the role as the main villain in Rush Hour 3. And, you know, part of it was exactly Vincent was trying to find the right character. So Vincent went off to America, studied English, now speaks very fluent English, and really worked at his skills. And with True Legend, Yuen Woo-ping gave Vincent probably the role of a lifetime. I mean, it's an incredible action role, but it actually, the character has a very strong dramatic journey. You know, the beginning of the movie, he's a family man. He's come back from the war. You know, his life is good. And suddenly his entire life is thrown into turmoil by various things that I can't really talk about.
Right. And sure.
He has to undergo a journey. He becomes a drunk and then eventually becomes the drunken master, you know, and rebuilds his family and everything. I mean, it's a very, it might sound stupid, but it's an action movie first and foremost, but there's an incredible, there's a really strong dramatic arc to the story. And I think a movie like this as well will garner a lot of international attention for Vincent.
Yeah.
I mean, Vincent's 37, 38 now. Mm. He still moves incredibly. He's got a great physique. He's got a great look. He's grown into his looks as well.
Yeah.
Like now he really has that leading man presence that I think sometimes he didn't have in the past. It's the same. It sounds stupid. It's almost like Fan Siu Wong. You know, Fan Siu Wong now has the charisma, has the presence that before he was a little bit lacking of. You know, Fan Siu Wong had incredible physical skills, but the fact that he didn't become a breakout star immediately, he went off and did a lot of TV as well. And working on TV, you really improve your dramatic arc.
There's tons of examples of Hong Kong actors. Actually, they need to go through that process. One, acting a lot, and TV is a good example, but also growing older. Because there's an unrelated example in terms of this actor. He's not an action star, he's not a kung fu star, but Alex Fong. You know, from the Angel films and all that kind of stuff.
No, exactly.
When I saw him, that
kids, yeah,
he was a dork in those movies. That looked like a dork to me. But when I saw Portland Street Blues, it's like, wow.
I think no, exactly. I mean, he was this good-looking but slightly dorky-looking guy. And then I think the first time I saw a change was he did a movie called Guns of the Dragon, American Dragon, mm-hmm. Where he's a villain opposite Ray Loy, Loy Loy Wei.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that's Alex Fong, but he's older and he looks better now because he's lost that dorkiness.
Yeah.
And he'd worked at his acting. And it's that same thing that sometimes it's timing, it's finding the right role at the right time. I mean, you know, the people forget that for Once Upon a Time in China, who was Troy Hawk originally trying to get? But T. Lung. T. Wow. Lung was, you know, the first person. You know, look at Snake and Eagle Shadow. Who was originally meant to do that? Alexander Fu Sheng. But Shaw Brothers wouldn't release him and asked for too much money. So Yuen Wu Ping and Ng Si Yun said, well, you know what? We'll take Jackie Chan. And we'll make Jackie Chan into a star with this project.
Yeah.
And that's not knocking Jackie's ability, but it was suddenly having to showcase, you know, having someone who understands what you can do, believes in what you can do, and gives you the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
And I think with True Legend, that's what they've really given to Vincent. I mean, he probably worked average of 14 hours a day. I mean, for a lot of the movie, he is under heavy makeup.
Mm.
That outfit was not the most comfortable outfit to wear for a lot of the film. And he took a lot of knocks. I mean, he's fighting throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And there are occasional moments where he's doubled for something, sometimes just for the fact that if he gets hurt doing it, the whole movie will be, you know, in trouble.
Yeah.
But it's like he did some incredible action. He's got great control, great attitude on the set. I mean, really, you know, working with him on this movie, you really, really realize this is a movie star, and this hopefully is the project that's going to break him out.
There was always, I brought this up on the show as well, but I'm almost happy to say this again. The sole aspect I saw in Vincent, because I don't analyze action as well. I analyze acting a little bit better, and I saw he was good at warmth. Actually, he had a warmth about him, a likability about him. That was one of his, that was one of the versatile aspects of him. I mean, I will always quote The Chinese Feast out of all things as a movie to showcase that, because I think he's so good in Chinese Feast as that kind, cook, which to me is essentially is Wong Fei-hung. But
oh no, exactly. If you watch Once Upon a Time in China Part 5, the moment where he's reunited with Rosamund Kwan's character, I think there's that warmth. In Green Snake, exactly, he's this likable monk. You know, he's introduced as what could be construed as an evil character. You're killing off a different spirit. But this, exactly, he's got that likability. And yeah, I mean, Chinese Feast, there you go. You know, you've got Vincent and Hong Yan Yan, Song Zing Zing, turning up in a Choi Hark feel-good comedy. opposite Leslie Jung and Anita Yun. It's great fun, and that's the thing. Sometimes it's just finding those roles and hitting them at the right time.
Yeah.
Look at Donnie Yen. I mean, Donnie now is completely and utterly, he's Ip Man. Everyone regards him as that's Ip Man. He's the hero. For the longest time, Donnie has always had the physical skills, but it's only really with Ip Man that he cemented with audiences. Up until then, people were always, Donnie's got incredible physical skills. But Ip Man cemented it. Ip Man was the role that made him a superstar.
It's certainly a good time also to bring out this kind of movie, albeit as we discussed on the show, we're glad that there's not a 20 kung fu movies being released every month, but it's a good time. It seems like it's a good time to produce this kind of movies.
Blades and True Legend, okay, and Jeff Lau's comedy, and last month we had Bad Blood, which was very much a 1980s Hong Kong movie with short-haired female action stars and lots of triad violence.
So
I don't know. I think the resurgence is coming, which is about time. For True Legend as well, I mean, in addition to the starring roles of Vincent Zhao as the lead, Andy On as his nemesis, and Zhao Shen as the female lead, there's a very strong supporting cast. I mean, it's like for fans of traditional kung fu movies, you've got Gordon Liu turning up as the mysterious white-haired man, and you've got Leung Gai Yen turning up to play Vincent's father. So, I mean, that's Leung Gai Yen, of course, from
Warriors 2, out of many things.
And so. Legend of the Fighter with Yuen Woo-ping.
Yeah.
And, of course, Gordon Liu, the master killer himself. Plus, you've got, David Carradine, as I said, who makes a nice cameo appearance in what was sadly one of his last roles. Yuen Woo-ping, I was really impressed as well how much effort he did take in the supporting cast and, on the dramatic side of things. Yes, he's a very incredible action director, but he also knows the dramatic side of things. People forget that a lot of movies like Legend of a Fighter, the dramatic story works. There's more to it than just people kicking each other in the face. Andy Young's character in True Legend is a very, very interesting character. And it's another really good role for Andy on. Andy's come a long way since, Black Mask 2. Andy's worked at his physical skills. He's worked at his dramatic skills. And he really delivers. It's a really good role for him as a villain. And I think, as I said, there's so much to look forward to. I'm sure a lot of people on the internet are going to be complaining that Michelle Yeoh's not in the movie enough. But it's a cameo role. The same as her role in Fearless was a cameo role. It amazes me that people still act as if huge amounts of footage with Michelle Yeoh was shot for Fearless and cut out.
It's also amazing how people get up in arms way too easily about minor things like that.
If you go to Twitch Film, a couple of weeks ago, Todd Brown had mentioned that he felt that, Michelle Yeoh had lost a lot of opportunity after turning down the Matrix movies. And people reacted as if Todd had accused her of murder or something. People were complaining and acting. And the truth of the matter is, after Crouching Tiger, Michelle had so much opportunity. Yeah. But unfortunately, The Touch and Silverhawk were not in any way the films they could have been. And they didn't serve her very well. And I'm hoping that with the new movie she's working on for, the John Woo-produced Swords movie, yeah, the Lady Swordsman, that it's a role that's going to suit her. Because it's that same thing, as horrible as it may sound. You know, Crouching Tiger, one of the reasons she was so good in that was because she was playing a character of her age.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem as well. It's sometimes knowing when to grow old. Jackie, Donnie Yen, etc., they're all realizing they can't play the 25-year-old anymore.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people, that was one of the complaints about Dragon Tiger Gate. You know, you've got Donnie trying to be a 25-year-old. And Donnie's in incredible shape and looks great, but he doesn't look like he's 25. You know, so I think it's like we said, you know, it's sometimes it's that same thing. It's finding the right roles and the right age for a character and everything. I mean, and I said, with True Legend, Yuen Woo-ping really, really went to bat for, like, what he wanted. I mean, his ideas were very solid about the kind of characters he wanted, the kind of roles. I mean, when we were developing the script, script was by Christine Toh, who wrote Fearless and also wrote Murderer last year. You know, it was very much, Yuen Woo-ping wasn't trying to shoehorn actors into certain roles. You know, he was like, I'm looking for someone who will be a believable mountain bandit, not just let's find a pop star and put him in there. You know, the character that Jay Chou plays in the movie, yeah, the main character of the God of Martial Arts, he's an imaginary character.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the problem as well. A lot of people have seen early pictures and have seen everyone else is wearing, like, you know, very realistic, grungy styled costumes, and there's Jay Chou in a superhero outfit. You know, and the thing is, only he's an imaginary character, so he can wear what he wants. It's meant to be, you know, that Vincent is imagining this.
Yes.
Vincent is imagining this is the ultimate god of martial arts, so perhaps we should blame Vincent for the character. Yeah. although Jay Chou did design his own costume. So like I said, I think it's just that same thing. I mean, like with Jay Chou, it's finding the right roles for him. Yeah, he's a very, very talented individual, but it's that same thing. You know, he has yet to find a movie to really make his mark with. And I said, I mean, the good thing about True Legend is as well, the film's producer is Bill Kong, and Bill Kong is, number one, one of the best producers in Asia. Two, he trusts his directors. Like, he will not second guess them. He will not try and, you know, control them to the point of, you know, they're given no creativity. You know, if you want to do something and it's going to cost so much money, Bill Kong will ask you why it's going to cost that much money. You know, and if you say, well, it's going to cost this much money because this guy is a world champion and we need to bring him in and blah, 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 Bill Kong will support you. And for a movie like True Legend, you need a producer who will support you without trying to strong arm. Let's put some pop stars in there for supporting roles. You know, let's put a boy band in here and have them dancing. You know, it's one of those situations where it's sometimes all having the right support network.
It certainly doesn't come off as a vehicle with cheap casting in that regard, True Legend. It looks thought out. I mean, you don't necessarily get a chance to cast the likes of Lung Gaian in a supporting role in any movie nowadays. So, you know, because few people, producers and filmmakers, you know, think of him right away, you know.
Exactly. I mean, the easiest thing would have been, oh, okay, we'll get someone who's popular. We'll get Lam Suit and put him in there as that character.
But,
you know, Yuen Woo-ping had a vision that Lung Gaian would play that character, and this is the kind of look, and that's what he got. And that's why I like it, like his choices, that when he makes a choice, he sticks to it. He doesn't like to compromise. And sometimes it can be frustrating because he'll have an idea and you'll be trying to explain that maybe it can't be done, but he knows what he wants. I mean, the film was very much an epic in terms of production. I mean, we were shooting sections of it in 3D, and there were some hard conditions. I mean, as I said, but it's when we were working the film, you felt like it was an epic just when you were on set. I mean, it's one of those movies where you realized where the money was being spent and why. I mean, it's not, you know, you weren't on set going, this is a cheap movie. Yeah, I mean, you were on set going, this is an epic and this is going to be, this, you know, I can understand now why we're filming long hours and why we're in these conditions, because this is the shot that they wanted. I mean, I said, I really think it's going to show people there is a lot more to Yuen Woo Ping than just action. Mm. I mean, it, you know, it's incredible action, but also what he can do as a director again, because, you know, people forget that, you know, long before, you know, he's not just an action director. He has an extensive career as a director.
And Legend of a Fighter, I actually neglected to think of when discussing it on the show. I haven't seen it yet, but I know for a fact it's very well regarded as an actual movie too. And that was, you know, 20 years ago now. So you know, there was instinct there once, and that instinct has, you know, been growing and been, you know, it's more mature now. So it's like many things that break out and is critically acclaimed, it's about timing, and perhaps this is the timing for a movie like this about this character, and for Yuen Woo Ping, the director, and all the other cast and crew on it as well.
Oh no, exactly. I mean, one of the funniest things about Legend of a Fighter is Legend of a Fighter treads very similar ground to Fearless, because it's based on the same character, Fokkinga. When we were shooting Fearless, one day we were having a production meeting, and Ronnie Yu announced that he'd thought up the English name for the movie, and the English name for the movie would be Legend of a Fighter. And everyone was very, very happy, and I was the idiot who had to stick my hand up and go, there's already a movie called Legend of a Fighter, and it's about the same character, and Yuen Woo Ping directed it. And Yuen Woo Ping was like, oh, is that the English name? So it was, and it was just very funny, because I was just like, this is Legend of a Fighter. Yeah, this is fantastic. But like you said, it's the perfect canvas for Yuen Woo Ping. It's a, you know, it gives him the opportunity to pay, like I said, tribute to his father in that character. Yeah, it's not like the movie is all about father, I love you, but it's very much, it's paying tribute to the character that his father made famous and putting a new twist on it. I really think it will relaunch, you know, Vincent Zhao as a leading man. And as I said, I don't know if it will jumpstart, you know, a full-on kung fu movie revival, because I was surprised after Fearless that there wasn't a lot more full-on kung fu movies. But I think the success of movies like this, of Fearless, of Ip Man, at least seems to be getting people to think, okay, if we do a movie like this, we've got to do it right. Mm. You know, we can't cut corners and do, you know, Legend of a Fighter on a budget of $10. Yeah. You know, we've got to do it the right way. And, you know, if it's an epic story, we've got to make it into an epic. You know, I mean, Ip Man, as a, before Ip Man came out, very few people in Hong Kong really knew who Ip Man was. Mm. You know, now everybody knows Ip Man was Bruce Lee's teacher. You know, and it's just, it, you know, it made Wing Chun popular again in Hong Kong and China. Mm. You know, suddenly now Wing Chun is a cool martial art again. You know, and it's just very funny to just see how, it's like the success of a movie can sometimes change the way things, you know, people look at certain thing.
Locally even, I mean, that's the thing. The effect sometimes doesn't happen locally at all. So I'm very happy to hear that that is sort of is creating a buzz and did.
Oh no, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's funny because one of the things you realize when you when you arrive in somewhere like Hong Kong is how martial arts has fallen into the background. That, you know, whereas in England, in America, you know, in Europe, you know, you can ask 30 people and maybe 3 or 4 people are studying martial arts, and, you know, martial arts schools are often, you know, very impressive and making good money. You know, a lot of the schools in Hong Kong are very low key, you know, and it's frustrating sometimes. I mean, when I first came, you know, I've never been the deadly serious martial artist. I've always dabbled, but, you know, to realize that for a lot of martial arts, it was very hard to find a good teacher in Hong Kong. And but in a lot of cases, you know, the better teachers were in Europe or in America and everything. So it's nice to see, you know, martial arts slowly starting to take a hold again in Hong Kong. Mm. I mean, and as I said, in China, you know, Wushu is still huge. But like I said, the success of Ip Man has made Wing Chun suddenly very popular again in China. So, you know, so it could be an interesting thing to see. Who knows? True Legend may inspire lots of people to get drunk and start fighting.
Yeah.
And then Jeff Chan will say that it's a bad idea. But like I said, I mean, it's the same thing that, you know, people think that, the Drunken Master character is, he's drunk. That's why he fights the way he does, because he's manic. He's, he's not thinking, clearly at times. But it's like, it's going to be great entertainment. I said the film opens officially in Hong Kong tomorrow, and I said will be the bit what I think will be, it's going to be facing off against Donnie Yen's 14 Blades at the box office.
It's all good. So we shall look forward to it. It's playing right now all over the mainland and Hong Kong. I'm not sure at all about the other release dates in Asia, but it's playing right now, and I'm sure we'll come back to it once it gets exported, which it's bound to be. Right. Unless it's a total turkey that no one expected, This actually was breakdancing for 90% of the film. Mm-hmm. The 8 Show is breakdancing. No!
Well, no. It's Vincent that's breakdancing, and it's Jay that's rapping in the background.
Oh, and he's not cracking a smile, he's just doing it,
still
nonchalant. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like the Game of Death where it's a still shot of Bruce Lee's face over someone else's body. It's just that.
It's always that. Mm-hmm. With Jay.
Mm-hmm. Without the cardboard. But yes, we'll probably actually we should give our thoughts on the movie next week after we've finished downloading it, because I'm pretty sure if it's out in Hong Kong already, I'm pretty sure a very shaky old cinema copy has been leaked online.
Then it will be shaky cam.
Mm-hmm. Can't see the action. It's like, oh yeah, it's the cameraman's put it down again. I wish fuck was set down in this movie.
We should state that you should not download this movie. If you download a movie, download a quality copy that you can watch. And if you like the movie, then go ahead and buy it.
Mm-hmm.
That's legally dubious, by the way, but I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. Testing out the waters, but via a copy that you can watch, not a shitty cam job. Or a bootleg with subtitles translated through Babelfish. There's an Ip Man bootleg out there. It's just from Chinese to English, basically. So someone's just run it through Babelfish, and there you go.
Da-dum.
Yeah. So it's all good. Any plug-in?
For people... basically this is filling a gap for Mike here. The teaser trailer for Ong Bak 3 has hit the web, and of course it looks pretty damn cool. So I'll put that in with the show post if you haven't seen it already. And other than that, if you want to interact with the show, contact us via email, podcastandfire@googlemail.com, or twitter.com/podcastandfire, and of course the usual Facebook, podcastandfire.com. First, just send us your questions, comments, suggestions, and hilarious death threats. First person to send me like a cool kung fu death threat, I'll send you a DVD. UK only. Go on, I dare you.
Snake fist, eagle fist, cat style, drunken combined.
Drunken breakdancing, anything.
And silly fist, as demonstrated by Dean Sheck in many movies. You mentioned Impact earlier to me.
Yep, Impact magazine have actually covered True Legend this month, their February issue. Yep, it is the issue which features the video game Bayonetta on the front cover. So you could find that at impactmoviemagazine.co.uk, or I would say any decent shops.
And you can also download issues digital issues from the site.
Copies.
Because since I'm Sweden, I'm not based with any good shops such that will bring in.
Fucking shops don't carry it here either.
Ah, okay, there you go. It's funny, I browsed when I got a haircut last time. I thought, like, I don't want to buy like an evening paper, I don't want to pick up a gossip paper, which evening paper is, so let's just see if I can find anything that appeals to me. Cars, nope. Porn, yeah, but not at the barbershop, no. So I found nothing. Not related stuff or anything. So, but yeah, you can get the impact regardless online, and it's not far fetched that they did a story on it, a piece on it, because Mike Leader is connected to the production of True Legend. I think he has something to do with the casting.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked on that movie. So that's it. Are you looking forward to it now, people? We'll see.
Yes.
I'm expecting the people while we're recording the show to
speak out,
interact with the show. How far-fetched it might sound. I have high hopes for people.
All right. So, what about you, Ken? Plugs?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm good, so we're good.
Okay, we're done. So I've been your host for this evening, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me, we have had...
Kenneth Brosong.
Okay, tune in to us next time where we'll probably be discussing...
We'll probably be there where we will be discussing.
Mm-hmm. We'll be discussing subjects, topics, things worth listening to. So...
And smoother ways to sign off.
Yes. This is what happens when I don't have music. I've chosen not to have music. I'm continuing to try and dig my way out of this hole by talking more. And obviously...
See you next time. Bye! Bye.